The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
Well, when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
There's only one place to start on the hurling show today. JJ is here in studio with me, and we've Brian Carroll on the line, and that is Laois's brilliant win against Offaly. Brian, we have to absolutely bring that up. 2-13-6 points at half time, I think it was. This was a demolition. This was a last minute goal by Joe Bergen to put a little bit more respectability on the game. And it's not often. I've started the football show with Laois on a number of occasions. I've never started the hurling show with Laois, so I have to apologise here, Brian. It is the day that we beat Offaly in Amore Park.
Yeah, thanks for that, Willie. No, appreciating this lineup you're giving me over the last couple of weeks, sewing it into me for Offaly, but unfortunately, that's just the way it is at the moment. Eddie Brennan, very happy, obviously. Big win, big derby, obviously. But home advantage actually has tended to have a big bearing on this over the last number of years. And Laois now have a chance to go and try and qualify for the quarterfinal. So I think that's a, you know, it's a big thing. There's probably a little mini league going on there between Offaly, Laois and Carlow, and I think Offaly are the big losers last weekend. Now it looks like they're almost certain in the relegation decider. The only bit of hope we have is the fact that we're playing both Laois and Carlow away, so that if it comes to the relegation decider, they will have that at home. So unfortunately, that's the only positive I can see out of it at the moment.
Right, that's interesting. I didn't know that's how it worked. That's fair enough. I didn't. Just because you were drawn away, you'll get the home relegation. I'm going to start protesting this already. Like, I mean,
you shouldn't have said that in Brian, but you know that.
Jesus.
Well, he has a direct line into Croke Park, so he has. But you know, he'll get his change overnight. So
I don't think so. Come here. I want to talk to you quickly, JJ. When you were here about Eddie Brennan, did you expect him to go into management, or you know, how did you think playing with him that this was in him to be an intercounty manager?
I suppose later, the way Eddie as a player, he kind of developed himself very, very well. Like, you know, he's probably started his career, was all about his kind of a poacher, a goal scorer. But then you see later on in his career, actually one of his last years we played, we actually put him out on Paul Gmar to do a kind of man-to-man marking job on him to stop his influence on the game. And he had a fantastic game that day, and he let on for a hand pass on. He ran straight through a hand pass on for Richie Hogan. But yeah, as he kind of developed, and the more he's developing, then the more kind of confidence he had in himself, really, more, and the more vocal he was getting in the dressing room and everything like that as well. So started career when I came in first, probably not, but then the way he developed himself as a player and the confidence he got from Kirby developing himself, you could see that he had potential in him, all right, in regarding that, yeah, he'd be confident enough to go ahead and take over management as well, like, you know what I mean. But again, look, he had a couple of years at 21s, and this is a huge step to take over a senior inter-county team as well. So he obviously has the big job in mind to get back to Kilkenny whenever Brian decides to
Henry might have a jump on him there as well.
A couple of them there, but I suppose, look, you have to have experience in regard to taking over an intercounty team, and that's what he's doing with Laois at the moment. So yeah, look, he's doing his apprenticeship.
He's just using us now here. Yeah. He's using us for an apprenticeship. Yeah. And he didn't lose his League Sunday job either, Brian. He's done well there, and you're in with RTÉ there now too. You're down in Wexford Park, I hear, yesterday, doing co-com. They tried to rob Cheddar on me last year as well.
Eddie, I'm surprised he actually was on it last night, but yeah, no, they kept him on it. But Eddie's doing well enough through the management. But you know, it's amazing, JJ, when you look back at his career, how much he developed over the years, because he was a sniper probably throughout his career, but he was a real, you know, the typical corner forward starting out. But towards the latter years, he really added a bit of steel to his game. And I suppose that came from your infamous training sessions inside Nolan Park or wherever. But you know, Eddie wasn't afraid to mix it come towards the end of his year as well, able to manage himself. So, but he's a deep thinker. He does think about the game very well, and a nice fella. So you know, you couldn't but wish him luck as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think we're lucky to have him at the moment. I don't know. I think when you're a top level hurler, you can't continue on the punditry. But I suppose, no disrespect, obviously, to my own county, but Laois wouldn't really be playing the top, you know, at the top level. So he was, because usually when managers do give up the punditry when they take over teams, don't they, JJ?
Yeah, I'd say, but they were playing the Laois off the game was Saturday night, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So maybe he had the Sunday off so he could actually look at the games that was on that particular Sunday, because usually they they'd be playing on a Sunday afternoon, and you're trying to look after your own team and then go back and try and watch a couple of games and then do a highlight package. You can't do it, you know. So maybe just an opportunity came up that he was playing Saturday night and he had the Sunday off, so you had to look at the three games that yeah. he had to kind of look at and analyse as well, like, you know. So maybe that was part
also,
of it.
Also, yeah, leasing to Joe McDonough, so later on the year maybe will allow him the opportunity that, you know, he'll be able to cover the Lee McCarthy games, be it Leinster or Munster Championship, so he will be able to give the odd night to that, and he's not really crossing over on his own teams he's going to be coming up against.
Yeah, well, that's it. But when Leash win the Joe McDonough and they get into that All-Ireland quarter final, well, then it's obviously going to throw a spanner in the works. So we have
you're,
to think. We have
you're,
to. Think
you're
think
stirring it already.
Creating a monster here now.
Think it down the line. Come here. We're going to concentrate on the Limerick Kilkenny game in part two. This was Limerick's first win in Nolan Park in 22 years, and they bloody did it in style. Like, I mean, they won it very, very comfortably, and they were outstanding. One quick thing I thought was weird when I was watching the match. Now, I'm obviously a football man, and I haven't played in Nolan Park. I trained there one day, but I remember being out on the pitch. I don't remember togging in. But the Limerick lads ran out. The dressing room are at one end,
yeah,
and they're in the middle of one end. So the Limerick lads had to run out through the Kilkenny lads warming up to get out into the field. And I'm just wondering, has this caused problems down through the years, JJ?
There's two different. There's new dressing rooms there at the O'Loughlin's end of Nolan Park, and there's two different entrances. There's an entrance to your left, and there's an entrance to your right. So the home team dressing room is on your left hand side, so they come out the left hand entrance, and then there's an away dressing room there as well, and that's they should come
so
out the right
one. Should come out the other
so
end of the field.
It must have, that entrance must have been locked, and
right.
then the lads must have had to come out the left hand side.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But usually there are two different entrances and exits for both different teams as well, like, you know.
Right.
So.
Okay. Because Tullamore has that too.
Yeah, but would it? No,
it's down in the corner.
Usually we have manners, yeah, but we've manners in hurling. We don't want carrying on like that in football. But Dave, there's a great story about that with Davy Fitz in UL and LIT in Fitzgibbon a few years ago. There was a massive crowd in UL, and Davy landed up with his LIT team and pulled up at the side of the road, and the LIT team came in through the bushes.
Oh, I heard that.
And warmed up on the UL end. So UL came out as well and then looked at it, and of course no one was going to take a backward step. And both teams ended up warming up on one end of the field. But of course, Davy, of course, played dumb and said he was just took that end of the field because it was closest to the road. So any opportunity he can get, to be fair to him.
Yeah, and another little strand to that one is who's the manager of UL? Only Brian Lowen, and James Davy and Brian don't speak anymore since that. Yeah, it's a classic. We had Brian on the show here. There's no love lost.
Is
none at all because of that.
I wouldn't be arguing with Brian Lowen, I'll tell you that.
Well,
I go to the other end of the field, it's no problem.
I don't think Davy thinks about stuff like that. He's such a competitor. So that was another thing I saw in the game which I'd never seen before, and this is winter hurling, and we've covered all the winter hurling, the rooks and all the different stuff. A man stepped on a ball on the ball, and it plugged into the ground like golf.
Yeah.
And like the ball was just stuck in the ground. I'd never seen that before. Is that
you know, when you're in trouble, and you're starting walking the ball into the ground, you know, you're on your last legs. But yeah, look, it happens now and again. All right, yeah, there has to be a throw in then, because the ball is stuck in the ground. You can't raise the ball or roll lift the ball out of the ground as well when it's stuck in it. And yeah, I seen it happen there yesterday. All right, now, yeah, it's kind of a good back trick now if you're in trouble now, just walking into the ground.
It rubbed the words on my mouth.
You ever
more
do
prevalent in club hurling though, Willie. I think the pitches wouldn't be as good as order, so you would be used to seeing it in club hurling in the winter.
Well, I have to say, I've done it in golf. You'd be walking past your buddy's ball up ahead and he hasn't seen you, and you're walking. Sorry, you're plugged, buddy. I don't know how to
play better lies, isn't it?
Yeah, so like, I mean, these are all, I learn a lot of these dark arts about hurling that potentially, because Brian, we obviously know, we've Damien Hayes let the cat out of the bag with JJ here. We all thought JJ
is telling
this,
lies about me.
This clean, outstanding, nine All-Irelands, brilliant player. And Damien basically said, JJ, it was just cute. He was as dirty as all the rest of them. He was just cute the way he's done it. And I'm sure he's walking.
It's a terrible remark.
Now he's admitting to walking the ball into the ground.
JJ hit you before he even thought about it. There's the best man I've ever seen in the air, bar none. I remember marking him one day in Nolan Park. You definitely don't remember this, JJ, but high ball was being cleared. Maybe the cornerback of the offaly was about to clear it. And I set myself, I knew JJ was beside me, and you're a lefty and real hard to catch the ball over a lefty, and I said to Ryan, I'm going to really feel myself, and the ball was only midway coming down to the air, and you buried me with an elbow into the side of the head. My ears were ringing. All I could hear was a roar of the crowd. JJ had to catch the ball right down the field. I'd say about 30 seconds later, I'm getting the curly fingers.
It must have been an accident, Brian. I apologise for that.
Oh, yeah, just an accident, yeah.
Well, I'm thinking of Brian lying on the ground and just hearing this roar and knowing exactly what the roar was for, Brian.
Poor Garner forward.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. So that was his trick, a good elbow to the side of the jaw early, and that's...
You hopefully no referees are listening to this podcast, though, Ray, but I won't be able to walk on the field again.
That's all right, you're nearly retired, James.
Yeah.
All right.
Come here. Getting slower doing that as well, that's a problem.
Come here. We gave out about referees a good bit in the Tipperary Clare game with the Tony Kelly sending off, and we say they're getting a little bit too whistle happy, and I definitely thought they were whistle happy in Nolan Park and in Wexford Park from what I saw. But the Noel McGrath sending off, can you have any complaints for that, JJ? Like, I mean, for me they did look like two yellow card, stonewall yellow card offences.
Yeah, but look, Mir, if you see what's happened over the last couple of days, you have to kind of read what referees are going to be looking for. They're going to be looking for a head high tackle, and if you give a referee excuse, he's going to give you yellow and give you second yellow as well, like, you know what I mean? So again, any players that are playing league format over the next 2 or 3 weeks probably will get a yellow card for this, but again, come championship they won't get yellow cards for it, you know what I mean? They won't get sent an os for it, so you kind of have to read what the referee is going to actually blow. And at the moment, head high tackles are a huge thing. The hullabaloo over Tony Kelly sending off should be enough for any player not to just kind of sell himself and don't put himself into that position. But Noel unfortunately did, and he got two yellows for it, and that was it, like, you know.
And that was it, yeah. Do you know, he was unlucky in a way, because the second tackle, while it was probably a yellow, O'Keefe went to the ground and he got a knee in the head, an accidental knee in the head by a Tipperary player running past him, and he went down holding his head, and then all of a sudden it looked a lot more dramatic, Brian, than it actually really was.
Yeah, it happened right in front of me, actually. And O'Keefe was very clever now, and I'm not saying he dived or anything like that, because you said he did get a bit, but he knew the challenge was coming and he threw the ball ahead of him so that even if he was challenged, he didn't have the ball in his hand. So worst case scenario, he was getting a free. But the Tipperary, in fairness to their forwards, Sheedy has brought back massive work rate. I know we saw that earlier against Clare in particular, but it was a real kind of dogged game yesterday. The first half was particularly poor. It was real stifling stuff from Wexford in particular. The whole middle third was clogged up. But the Tip forwards, which we didn't see last year, every one of them were working their arses off and just constantly hooking and blocking. I think Noel McGrath was trying to bring that energy to it, but as Jade said, yeah, look, you have to learn from that. It's kind of every ref's looking out for it at the moment, and you just, there's time and a place. You really have to line the lad up now if you want to try and go in hard like that, and you just have to hold off that little, just that little bit at the moment to let, probably until we get into the championship and all these things will be okay.
Yeah. What about Tony Kelly's point, lads? Because Don Lochusek is saying the ball's the wrong colour. Now, it's going to be a big thing to change the colour of the ball with the tradition. It's just going to be look weird if it's yellow or whatever. But maybe that needs to happen, because this looked like a point.
Yeah.
But very, very hard for the umpires to tell. And like, a weird thing about this is that the influence of Anthony Nash. Personally, I think that goalkeepers that try to influence umpires should get a yellow card.
You should
have no business doing that. Yeah. And in fairness, Nash really must have believed it, because John Conlon ran in to say something and he says, "John, it was wide." Do you know what I mean? And
but you convince yourself when you're going in like that. You have to kind of commit to the whole thing when you're doing it. But look, the umpire is probably 10 yards away. It wasn't the case that Tony Kelly was 60, 70 yards out the field. Like, the umpire should be positioned himself even before Tony Kelly takes a shot. He's going to have to take for granted that Tony Kelly's over in the corner, he's in between the 21 and the 14, that he's going to take a shot at the goal. So the umpire should be actually positioned in place before even Tony hits the shot. But he wasn't in place, he was moving at the same time. But if he was in place, I'd argue the point that he should be able to see it anyway. He's 10 yards away.
The fella at the back post should see that.
That's what I'm saying, like, because Tony Kelly's at the far side. The umpire at the back post should be pitching himself to look at Tony Kelly head on, and then you can see the ball coming straight over the bar. But when Tony hit it, then the umpire started moving, and then he was in position. He was in position for it, you know. But I'd argue the point he should see it anyway, whether if it's white or yellow or black, the ball, he should see the ball going over the bar.
I don't know. Have you ever done it, Brian, umpiring? Like, I've never done it in hurling, but like, I mean, I imagine it's probably not that easy if the ball's going really high over the bar, or like, I mean, or is it? I don't know.
No, it is tough. I've actually done a little bit when I was maybe a bit younger. I'm just filling in for games and stuff like that, but it is tough, yeah. But that was an audacious point by Tony Kelly. He came inside the 14-yard line and, got it over. I thought from one angle it looked over, and from another angle I thought it was wide, so really, really hard to tell.
Yeah.
Just shows the importance of Hawkeye, like in the big stadiums, you know. I know that was only Parky Rain the other night, but it's really important. Like, how many times have we seen umpires get it wrong? And I know as a forward, there's nothing drives you more crack, and you actually score a good legitimate point and it's waved wide. Don Logan's, you know, it's probably touching on something there with the yellow slitters. We use them, I remember, JJ, in the Hurling for Cancer game. The yellow ones. It's a little bit weird when you have them at first. I noticed Wexford actually had a load of them in the warm-up. Didn't use any throughout the game, but they had a load of them in their warm-up. And I suppose it takes a little bit of getting used to. Don Loughlin does have some fair queer ideas now when it comes to hurling, but he might be too far out with this one.
Why do you think they'd be training with the yellow ones? Would that not be a bit weird for them?
Could be at night. Could be the same thing. Could be training their lights. Maybe they are better under lights. I don't know, to be honest. But
yeah,
they definitely had a lot of them anyway while they were doing their warm-up.
Another thing here, just in that Clare game, JJ, for starters, it was like a challenge match. It was when you talk about this National League and the more important league coming up soon, and it almost like is a pre-season tournament now. Brian Cody's not even disappointed yesterday getting hammered at home. None of them seem to care. So yeah, how can anybody care? But did you see the foul by Young Hayes on Jamie Coughlin as he's running through?
Have
you ever? So he hooked his foot.
He tried to hook his foot, right? Yeah, yeah.
Well, he caught him though.
Well, that's the only body part he could hit was his foot when he's going back for the hook. But I'd say he was just trying to trip him before he's going through goal. He thought Jamie's going to finish straight to the net, but he was going to take the yellow card, take the free, and get the free in. But yeah, he left flyer right now. Yeah, but it kind of worked because Jamie hit wide.
I don't think it was even a free, was it?
No, you can pull back. You got a yellow card for that.
What do you think of this league, Brian? Going to start bragging here, and I'm going to say I completely predicted this would happen, because at the preview show of last year's show I went, we're having a league, we're having a month's break, and then we're having a much more important league. How can the National League as it is? Now, I know the relegation is definitely affecting it this year, but when you look at it, Brian, next year they're going to split them evenly, so you'll have Laois Offaly, you'll have Carlow, and you'll have a few weak teams always fighting for relegation, so you'll have none of the big teams ever worrying about relegation. And then all they're going to do is treat the league as like a Keogh Cup.
Yeah, it's completely a warm-up competition now, and the way it's even going. I said it yesterday, Tippin, Wexford were the only two teams that I thought were actually taking this league serious and that they'd like to get a victory out of it. I think Davey in his third year needs some silverware. And I think the same with Liam Sheedy. I think when he's back new, he wants silverware. Now, he came out after the game yesterday and, of course, said otherwise, but... he's going to be fooled by that, because they went for that game full-blooded yesterday. But the league now, see, it's caused a change in Leinster Munster Championship, and they're in the league stages as well. You know, it's the group stages again, so it's had a massive knock-on effect. An easy fix in football, which we know will probably never happen, is to change the league and the championship around. But in hurling, I suppose we've already done that now, almost. We have the Leinster League and I won't even call it Leinster, because it's almost the rest of Ireland League at this stage, and then we have the Munster League.
Yeah, no, that's it. And when you look at it, it was always Division 1A was always Jesus, no manager wanted to go down because it looked bad.
Yeah,
so it gave us great games in the league, and it gave us a really intense league. Now, and in next year, nobody will ever have that worry of going down. So you'll constantly be trying out lads and extending your panel. I'm just wondering if they're looking long term, JJ, is the solution here to go... combine your league and championship and go home and away and go from April until mid-June and then play your All-Ireland quarter-final. You know what I mean? And
mix
it. Or else you're just having basically January the pre-season competitions, you have February and March in another pre-season competition where it's just look at Galway this year.
You'll probably see the league, probably the smaller the Walsh Cups and them kind of stuff, they'll be probably done away with now.
The
league now probably might start a bit sooner than that. But it could be an issue there that if you the better you do in the league, the more home games you get in your Leinster League Championship or your Munster League Championship as well. There has to be a carrot in front of managers to let their players loose and actually go win the actual league competition, because at the moment all managers are doing is trying to fix two or three certain key problems that they have from last year regarding positional problems or where to play a certain player as well. They're using this league as, right, we'll fix A, B and C, get right for the Leinster League and the Munster League, and that's what we'll do. If we win along the way, all well and good. If we lose, all well and good, doesn't make a difference. Once we solve the problems for A, B and C, we'll be happy come championship again. That's all it is.
The Clare Cork game, I've seen challenge games that are more keenly contested than that.
Yeah, but it was just stop-start. The amount of freeze that the... Now, Clare will probably have to have a look at themselves as well. They had that game won. They were the best team for around probably... 50 minutes of that particular game, but they left Cork in it. Like, Cork only scored a point from, Patrick Gordon got his first point from play in his 30th or 32nd minute. They got a goal from play, fair enough, but that was the first point from play. They just kept on fouling, 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 and was needless fouls as well. So that was an aspect of the game that, against Kilkenny, same story again. Kevin Kelly scored 111, and that's a certain thing that Clare will have to address now before the championship comes, because they're still fouling like that. Yeah. They're going to stop the whole thing. Like.
How is that addressed, Brian? Is this just in discipline, or are they not being coached right, or how can you, like, I mean, obviously your tackle technique, and they're just getting hands on the man too much. Are they over eager, or what's the problem with them?
I think it's a combination of everything you said, and then obviously whistle happy referees during the league. So I think it's,
yeah,
it is, I won't say it's a huge concern, but it is an item that they need to clean up, because they've owned the ball against a lot of teams, and even the same against Kilkenny in Cusick Park. They were wiping the floor with Kilkenny, but, you know, Kevin Kelly's freeze kept Kilkenny in the game. So it is an issue. Clare, yeah, they tend to overplay the ball in off locks and get fantastic scores, but they don't seem to just put teams away. That seems to be their big issue.
Yeah, they seem to be going in and out of games, definitely. Come here, we'll come back here. The big game, like I was saying, was Limerick Kilkenny in Nolan Park. We'll talk about that next.
It's bone to lie. There's no point in papering over like that. It is extremely tough. I won't tell you, but again, it's not about me or Morris or anyone else. It's about Waterford.
We've waited so long. I know I've seen one of your tweets yesterday. It's like 6 years. It's a leash, man, but it's a long 6 years for us there, and we're absolutely thrilled.
I remember after Leinster final, I was Tuesday morning. My nephew was out in the lawn and he was taking freeze with his socks pulled up, pretending to be TJ Reid, and fairly brought me back down to earth that day anyway.
Jeez, JJ, that must have been difficult for you to watch this yesterday, because it was 2-18 to 15 points, and there were every bit of a 9 point kind of winners in this one, even though Kilkenny were very competitive right the halfway through the first half. And then for some reason, I don't know if this is in my own head, coming up to half time, often teams with the win get a quick purple patch and suddenly it all comes unravelled.
Yeah, you can look at it, but look, you have to appreciate what Limerick do as well. As a hurling team, they're a joy to watch at the moment. You know, first half did no issue regarding any of their backs from play. They can go along into the full forward link. Aaron Gillan can win it in the air, he can win it on the ground. Second half then, against the wind, Limerick just had options left, right and centre. Any one of the Limerick backs had it, and he had an option to run or right, run or left, played it through the lines, or then hit it in long. Their half forward didn't come very, very deep.
Yeah.
Kilkenny half back didn't know what to do. Did it come out so far or to leave space? But Kilkenny half back came out, and then they left Aaron Gillan one on one with Conor Laney inside in the full forward lane as well. And Limerick were so intelligent where they poked that ball as well. Like, you know,
so was any half back line followed them?
A majority of the time they did, because Shane Dowland was centre forward, but the amount of times he was in his own half back line, just working hard, getting back to the ball. Kyle Hayes was back down the field as well, like, you know, and they were just getting the ball, and then they weren't panicking. When they got the ball, they'd even hit it backwards to keep possession and then work it up through the lines, and it was just a joy to behold, really, to be honest with you. And then Shane Dowland came off it with 1-2 as well, so he wasn't only working, but he was up the field scoring again. As a centre back, you're kind of saying, right, if my man goes down the field, I have to make sure I'm hitting ball back in centre back to justify my own position, justify the reason I'm not going following my man. But like, Shane Dowland done a lot of work, but he scored 1-2 as well, like, you know what I mean, and I'm looking for another goal as well.
Yeah. What do you do, Brian, because from what I saw last year, the game Limerick lost was against Clare in Cusick Park, and Clare didn't follow their half forward line, and they were kind of hitting it back into Clare lads who had extra men then, I thought, that day. Like, I mean, is the tactic against Limerick not to follow them or follow them? Like, we talked about this last year. It is a difficult decision.
Yeah, I suppose you have to get your own half forward line to almost mirror them, what they're doing, so that they clog up that middle third. So, look, you have to protect. We've seen similar enough probably with Cork and Clare. You know, Tim O'Matney shot at centre back, yet Tony Kelly scored 6 points from centre forward. So you really do need a disciplined midfield and half forward line. They're really the key to it. That they're the ones coming back narrow in that space, and that, you know, that they're doing all that work. You almost you try to leave probably two inside at a minimum, and your third person off your full forward line is probably out about 40 metres trying to work hard there as well. So it's definitely changed. It's not the same as just hurry your 15 positions and win your own ball. That element of it has changed.
And we definitely saw that a lot in Wexford yesterday. So it's rotating, it's a lot of hard work. I suppose it's really hard on that wing forwards, but Limerick have them in abundance at the moment. So, you know, you still have, you know, you have Tom Morrissey there as well. You know, as you said, Kyle Hayes, Shane Dowland back starting this year. And, you know, they have a rich panel at the moment in terms of talent. It's unbelievable.
They actually do. And it's not just, like, we know all the lads that weren't there yesterday. But, like, I mean, Kyle Hayes playing 10 instead of 11. So now, if he wants, he can do that 10 job. Shane Dowland can. It's the options they have. Dowland can play 14. Galan can play, you know what I mean, 14 if you want. And then in the fullback line, obviously, Finn is playing fullback at the moment. Condon is playing great stuff. Mike Casey has to come back in there. They have options in their halfback line now yesterday with young the McLaughlin fella. Is that O'Loughlin fella. So Dan Morrissey can show that he can play centre halfback. Like, these, it's the options that they have right throughout the field. And anyone, the great thing about having a system, JJ, and a system that everybody knows is when a sub comes into that system, he's coming into the same system. Like, the system stays the same, the personnel change.
It's a huge thing. And the system is working for this particular group of players. And anyone that by all the players, the whole panel, you know, by the whole management team, the whole panel, they're all on the same hymn sheet. Everyone is buying into the same system, because anyone that comes on just fills the jersey. They know exactly what to do. Even before they get the ball, they know exactly what to do as well. So I'd say at half time they were told, right, we're against the wind, no point in lumping the ball back in the top of the Kilkenny half back line, work the ball through the lines. And that's what they did. They worked the ball through the lines, and then they sucked out the Kilkenny half back line. Then when the half back line were out, then they were pinging balls into the corner there in Galan, and he's winning every ball. Kilkenny full back line, I'd say every one of them went on him, but they couldn't handle him at all. He's on top of his game at the moment. He's hurling top level Fitzgibbon hurling at the moment as well. Like, you know, they're in the Fitzgibbon final with Mary Ice too. Phenomenal. He probably had three or four big competitive games to get to that final as well, so you know that he's on top of his game. He's scoring 110 or 111 every game for Mary Ice as well, so he's just, confidence is through the roof at the moment.
Yeah, we'll talk about him a bit in performance of the weekend, but Morrissey went off at half time. I thought he was cleaning out Tommy Walsh, or was Morrissey start? Did Morrissey start
in the corner right now, and we're kind of mixing match. You know, Aaron Galan was in the corner, and he was in full forward on Conor Delaney there at times as well, but I think every one of them got a go on him, but unfortunately they had to make a change, and Tommy was hitting a bit of ball where Enda wasn't, so I'd say they had a curly finger to win, but Paul Murphy back into the full back line, so they thought he might handle Aaron Galan, but he had a go at him, but he wasn't kind of able for him either, you know.
No.
It was just the quality of the ball that was going in from the Limerick midfield, half back line, half forward line. It was just top quality.
Tom Condon was interviewed after the game, Brian, and he was asked about playing Kilkenny, and he was talking about, you know, you're going to get a real physical game against Kilkenny, and then he was asked something about the physicality, and he said it's part of our game. We like to be physical. A central part of our game is our tackling, our hooking, and our blocking. And Dermot Burns was interviewed then, and he said we don't hold back from nothing. Like, I mean, that's the truth from watching Limerick. Like, we can talk about their system and talk about their, you know, the way they never waste balls. But when their balls are on the ground, they're coming out with them. They're hooking. Like, I mean, they're great at getting a flick away when the ball's on the ground. You know, if somebody thinks they have it, you know, they're getting it up on their hurl, they'll flick it. They're just getting in hurls everywhere. Like, their intensity is massive. And I don't want to bring it back to intensity, but maybe it's physicality and not holding back. There's a real edge to them.
Yeah, and you have touched on it a few times now, Willie, but there is no magic secret to any successful team in order to stay at the top. It is down to hard work, and that comes with humility and teamwork as well. So, you know, I know they're all the buzzwords, but it's the truth. You know, you look at any great team that's stayed there at the top, they work harder than anyone around them, and obviously they're hurling with confidence as well, and that's a key part of their game, and they're at the top now. They seem to be relishing in it. Galan obviously is the go-to for it. He's amazing at the moment, and I know we'll touch on him later on, but you know, to be able to have that depth of talent that's so honest and so, you know, so hard-working as well, that's the key, and I think that's the big part from John Kiley's perspective. You know, Limerick won their All-Ireland, they enjoyed it, and rightly so they enjoyed it, but they also have just got back down to brass tacks and just brought what I suppose got them to the top last year, and that was built on, you know, work rate and you know, using the ball intelligently. It's a full package. It's not one thing or the other, because you can have all, we all know this, we can have all the best hurlers in the world, but you have to bring that other side to your game. It's dog eat dog at intercounty level. And John Kiley must be smiling at the moment. The only word of caution I would have is they're so far ahead of everyone at the moment it's such a long season. Like, we're only in the middle of February. You know, Galan, as you said, she's playing for Skippen there as well. To just use him as an example, he's playing week in, week out at the moment. He still has a number of Munster League games to go, say they're, you know, and to get through to maybe a Munster final or Ireland semi-final. It's a hell of a lot of way to go to the middle of August.
It's a long year, JJ, isn't it? When you put it that way. Now, they are mixing and matching a lot. Like, I mean, you could list maybe seven or eight players that wasn't there, but to be at that high level of play right throughout the year, it doesn't happen like that, does it?
And this time last year, Limerick were going very, very well. And then there had a lot of lads, guys hurling UL Fitzgibbon, and they weren't with the Limerick panel at the moment. Then the New Jersey lads this time last year weren't. And they brought a freshness. When they came back to the Limerick panel, they brought a freshness back into the panel there as well, especially in the New Jersey as well. So they don't have that kick or freshness this year as well, so they're going to have to manage that. They have their full panel is there at the moment. They have no one else to come back. That's what they have now at the moment. Now, it is very, very impressive.
You'd rather be playing well than not playing well, right?
No, it would be 100%, but it's just, it won't happen the same as last year. You know what I mean? The guys coming back, and just say, for example, this time last year, you're on the team, you've seen the dressing room, you're in the dressing room, then you see all the Pearcy lads coming in. Jeez, I'm going to have to raise my game here again, because on these days, they're after winning, getting to another club final. Like, so they're on top of their game at the moment. So I'll have to up my game again. And that could have been around probably March, April when they came back in again. So it's a case of they're going to have to maintain it, but they have to get bigger and bigger and bigger and grow as the championship goes. Like, the way they're hurling at the moment, it's beating teams at the moment, but they'll have to go up again now if they want to kind of retain that Ireland championship at the moment.
Yeah, we're not taking from them there, because they are amazing at the moment, and it's just something. It's a different dynamic that John has to obviously manage. I think that's the key to it.
Yeah, I think the most important thing there, and from my experience, if Kylie's saying, lads, just go out there, you know, we want to see a performance, and Kylie expects them to put in that level of intensity, but I suppose Kylie needs another level to go to then when the championship comes, and go, lads, you know, maybe from the speeches, maybe
he's the standard bearer, that's what he is.
We don't know what he's saying. If he's tearing down the restroom walls for these league games, I would say that's a mistake, John. I don't think he is.
No, I wouldn't say he's kind of very, very level-headed, and I'd say he probably left his couple of sections or coaches kind of chat away during the league, and then and come back in when comes championship, then he'll be the man to take that back over and bring him up another 5 or 10%.
You kind of have to see that change, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah,
no, definitely. Like, I mean, Richie Hogan, Brian, was interviewed at half time. Now, it was a little bit of a dig, I thought, he was trying to make, but not in a bad way. He was asked about the puck outs, and Murphy was going short with a few against the wind. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that, but he was saying, will they go long in the second half with the wind? It was Michael Rice interviewing him, and Richie says, well, Limerick are playing with 11 defenders, so it's better to go short with the puckouts when they're doing that. And like, they probably do. Like, the two midfielders will defend and the half forward line will defend. Now, Waterford got really bad press for playing defensively like this. How are Limerick playing such good hurling? Is it their use of the ball when they win it back that they just look better, where Waterford might clear it down to a man being double marked and Limerick don't do that? Or maybe Waterford dropped maybe an extra man?
Waterford had a definite sweeper. It used to be Tadhg Borcha whenever he was, you know, they had their full complement. And they literally left one person inside the 45. Sometimes Mara Shannon or maybe Jake Dillon.
Yeah.
So it was football style. Hurling Wexford are playing the exact same style at the moment. Whereas Limerick just dropped their half forward line deep. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, you know this yourself, JJ. Like, that's for all proper teams. So you did that yourself with Kenny, you know, the likes of Owen Larkin and whoever, you know, could have been Maren Comfort, the other half, or whatever, just dropping deep and working hard. And there's nothing wrong with it. I think what Limerick are bringing is the fact that they work the ball back through the lines until they can get someone to give a proper ball in, a 70-30 ball inside, just, you know, to a couple of players that are moving. Whereas probably in the opposite to your style, JJ, you got the ball and you lamped it down the field and you were able to win it any way you wanted.
Yeah, no, it's valid point, yeah, because even yesterday now, against the wind, there were just 20-30 yard passes straight to hand. Everyone were straight to hand. They weren't hitting the ground. That took the whole elements of a wet field. That took that out of consideration straight away. Straight to the hand, turn around, look. Not none up front, turn around, hand pass it off. They could hit the ball 20 or 30 yards, or else they could hand pass it, because there was runners off their shoulder, left and right. You see Tom Condon yesterday now, he was hitting the ball 30 yards and he was gone. He was gone again. He didn't care where his man was. His man wasn't following him. He was there for the 1-2 there as well. And then that kind of put Tom Condon in a lot of space, so he could pick out pick out the 70-30 ball. They weren't lumping up the field for the sake of lumping up, getting rid of it. They were all very, very confident on the ball and were assured of what they were doing. Again, they were told at half time, I'd say, let's play it through the lines, get their half back lane out the field, loads of space in the full full forward line, pinging into the corners for Aaron Glenn to win it.
Yeah.
That
see,
was their tactic.
Go on, Brian.
That doesn't happen by chance, by the way.
No.
You know, it is games-based training that they tend to be doing. You know, it's well documented at this stage. You know, they play a lot of short possession games and build this style. So that's why they're so comfortable. It just, you know, this pinging the ball around, you know, it won't just happen if you give those instructions. So, you know, you have to give them credit from that perspective. And Knurk is there. And we obviously know he did a lot of that with Clare back a couple of years ago. So, as I said, it's not by chance.
Well, that's it. So, like, here's two examples, and this is what I think separates Limerick. So, obviously, Galan got a lovely ball. I think it could have been from Tom Condon or someone, and he laid it off to Kyle Hayes, and I think it was Murphy that hit the post within the first half. So, that was a warning. So, if Hayes is dropping as deep, how is he getting up to get that offload off him? And, like, I mean, in the second half then, Tom Morrissey, he dropped deep, gave a lovely diagonal ball across to Galan again, who put it across to Shane Dowling in the middle. I remember he batted it over his head for a goal. Now, if Shane Dowling is dropping so deep, how is he there across from Galan?
They're not going at the one time. Very, very clever what to do, you know. Yeah. The half forward line, probably one might go deep or go to midfield, and Darragh Dunman goes back in the half back lane.
Yeah.
So then Shane Dowling is always an option for a kind of short ball. Out, but
there's no, because Waterford half forward line was never getting up that
Yeah.
There's something Limerick are doing smart here that they're not all dropping at the same time, or they're, I don't know. Like
the big thing of that, when you play the ball into full forward line, you need the ball to stick inside there. So Aaron Galan is obviously the ideal go to man in there. He wins the ball, and then he either has an option of shooting himself or have the runners off Kyle Hayes. So his role is hugely important in this Limerick team, because if he doesn't win that ball, then it doesn't matter where the runners are, the ball's going back down the field again. So again,
and Graham McKay brings that as well, in fairness.
Yeah. So you're looking at, if I was kind of managing the team to go tackle Limerick in the morning, Aaron Galan is the lad you'll have to focus on, trying to stop him.
Yeah,
like trying to win the ball, bring him that prime position off him. Like,
no, he definitely does.
Well, speaking of what you're talking about, Woolley coming from deep, it's that the one time you can actually lose your half back. That's what I find. If you drop deep, you know, the centre back maybe makes a decision to actually sit in the pocket. So they've concentrated on the ball there. So it's the one time where you can actually lose your man and maybe ghost in around the back, or, you know, you can make a run, draw half back, your wing forward can make the run. You know, so it's a lot of movement. It comes back down to a lot of fitness and fairness.
Yeah.
A lot of
huge
honesty there.
I was going to say that Tom Morrissey, Hegarty, Kyle Hayes, these lads' GPS numbers must be crazy stuff, because they seem to be all over the field.
That wouldn't suit me now, Willie.
the modern half forward might not suit you too well, Brian.
Definitely not. Throw it out and I'll put it over the bar.
The lads,
I heard you digging at me a few seconds ago.
I meant to say that to you, Brian. All right. Himself and Damien had a dig about you not going into any of these runs.
That's from experience, but you know that.
Not wanting to talk either. He was well able to hang out himself. Hey, I made a career in it. I make no apologies to anyone. You know?
Joe Brady made you up in Coolerry, so he did, didn't he?
He meant money's a man, John.
Yeah, he did, very so.
The way I look at it, Brian, you need one man thinking when 10 other men are rooting in around there. You need one man to be standing out going, here, when's this going to pop out to
it's
me?
It's like Shane Dowling for the goal yesterday as well. Ball came in, he was unlucky not to get a first break, but Aaron Glenn won it and hand passed it off. But he made the run. There was three or four lads go up for the one ball. He stood out. He was waiting for the break around. He didn't get it. Still continues running around the defenders. Aaron Glenn fronted him and he finished it. I mean, that's just absolutely brilliant. It's a natural forward thinking. Like, if you put a back up in the forward, what he'd do, he'd run up and try and catch the ball up there. He wouldn't stand out for the break, but it's just a natural, it's kind of a goal scorer's instinct, really, more than anything.
Yeah, no, it definitely does.
But there's 6 inches between a slap in the back and a kick in the arm in that situation, because when you hang out and you get the ball and you roof it in the net, you're the greatest man to slice bread. And look at that for movement and, you know, anticipation. And then if the ball's clear down the field, you know, why aren't you in the rooks? You know, get in there. You know, you're only hanging out, like, so, like, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. So
yeah,
I
definitely like the hanging outside one. I definitely like that. I'll get the old hand pass back out. Come here quickly, JJ. I want to talk about Kilkenny. Now, obviously, we have to keep saying this is the league and it's not panic stations. It's very rare you see Kilkenny getting dominated like that at home. I know Clare were hammering them, but Kilkenny came back. Was it last year or the year before?
Yeah.
But, like, you very rare you'd see them. Now, everyone says, oh, Kilkenny are missing lads and the Ballyhale lads. And then you're looking at Ballyhale and sure, who's guaranteed outside of TJ Reid and Colin Fennelly? Guaranteed starters now. And yeah, Colin Fennelly was on and off last year, but I suppose he'll be a guarantee this year when he's a full year hurler.
Yeah, yeah.
Killian Buckley's missing.
Yeah.
Now, they're definitely missing panel members, but are they missing first teamers outside of those three?
I suppose, look, at any point of view, I look for positives yesterday as well. Pádraig Welsh started his first game, he's out wing back, and he had a lot of ball, in fairness to him. Walter Welsh, when he was centre forward, I thought he disrupted Limerick a lot. Now in the first half, I think it was kind of a mistake putting him in. I know what they were trying to do in full forward and lump high ball and from Owen Murphy, poking down the top of him into the full forward line, but it didn't really work out that well because Limerick were just spoiling him, breaking it, and then they were, again, as what you said previously, they're in on the break and they're coming out with the ball. Again, you look at Richie Latty, he got 3 points from play. You have to look at these.
I'm a big fan of Richie Latty.
Yeah, nice hurler, right? But then if you look at it, first 20 minutes, I think it was 7-6, and Kevin Kelly missed a free. Walter Welsh missed a chance from open play. Richie Latty missed a chance from open play. He could have put him 3 or 4 points ahead of that particular stage, but then what switched around was Limerick up their game, and then they got 2-3 before half time. Look, again, Limerick would have went on and won the game anyway, but the three opportunities to take strikes at the goal and they missed the three of them as well. So against a team like Limerick, they're going to have to take that. You have to, no choice in the matter, you have to take it. But from positives, from any point of view, like you're looking at Pádraig back and Walter Welsh back in hurling strong again, like, you know. So again, we're trying to look at players. It's a pity Hugh Lawler wasn't playing there yesterday to see against top last opposition. Yeah. See how he would have went down. He must have been injured. He wasn't even on the panel yesterday, so he must have been injured. So be looking forward, hopefully he'll be back for next week's game as well. But yeah, look, again, it's a learning curve for these players as well. Like to Richie Latty, James Maher and John Donnelly, all these lads, they have to take something out of that game. And
they were lacking a bit of bite up front though, weren't they?
They
didn't have any kind of as much danger really.
No, you didn't even look, we didn't even look like entertaining going anywhere near the goal, like, you know. No. I don't think Nicky Bader had a shot to save, so at that point of view it's very, very disappointing. But look, a lot to work on, but again it's not the full team either, but you can only so long you can say that there as well, so you'd rather be a lot more competitive. But in case of Limerick, could have beaten by one stage, it was going for a record defeat now for Kilkenny at home there one stage. But look, they battled back again. The one thing Kilkenny will always do will go to the final whistle, but they're going to have to be, I think they're going to penetrate a lot more for the goal, really, more than that, you know. So that's where we'll have to kind of up the game a lot.
Yeah, okay, great stuff, lads. We'll come back with Paddy Power performance of the weekend.
I remember my mother, the Lord of Mercy, now she's dead. She's 8 years this year. She never saw me hurling live, but she always went to the matches, to the hotel, the two finals, and we got off the bus after the first one, and the first person to meet me was my mother, and she said, look, what's meant to be is meant to be. She said, keep the head up. I said, grand. No problem, ma'am, thanks. 96, back to the hotel again, first person off the bus, my mother. Says, ah, look, what's meant to be, Tim Hammond, you give it a fucking right.
All right, Paddy Power performance the weekend. We're going to start with Dermot O'Keefe, midfield for Wexford. Wing back an awful lot the last few years, but he's moved to midfield. I think he actually moved to midfield last year as well. He scored 3 points from play, Brian. You were down at this one. Like, I mean, he seems to revel in this kind of a broken up kind of game, which Wexford are like the ultimate spoilers, aren't they? They'll make the game all dogged and they'll make it kind of no flow to it, and that's how they'll beat you.
Yeah, actually, Dermot O'Keefe probably started out as a forward, actually, and there was probably an astute move by Davey putting him back, playing wing back, but not necessarily concentrating on the defensive. So he's known that they have a sweeper and ghosting up the field and finding himself in a bit of space and popping off for a couple of points. And I suppose he's moved up now to midfield with Sean Murphy probably playing in that half-back role with their new sweeper then. So yeah, he's real elusive. He loves that sort of, you know, breaking onto the loose ball. He always pops in with 2 or 3 points, and he did the same yesterday. He got the point that drew it up. He'd just gone off with a blood sub and came and got that third point. But yeah, speaking on Wexford style, absolutely horrible to watch from a neutral perspective, I have to say. It's borderline football tactics, I'd say. It's more than borderline at this stage. And I know Davey will argue, you know, results and all that sort of thing, and you can't argue with that. They're after beating Cork and they're after beating Tip, so there's nothing wrong with it. And he makes it into a dogged game. He stifles the middle third in particular, makes it really, really awkward on the opposition. But no, at the same time, I can't say I'm a fan of it. It's horrible to watch.
What about this young lad at centre forward, Casey? Is it? He got the 1-1. What does he? How does he look?
Yeah,
he's under 21.
I knew nothing about him, I have to say. And you know, he was small, elusive, finished the goal well. A breakaway from a Wexford perspective got inside the Tipperary defence. All the Tip players got dragged towards a throw-in, and Ian Byrne came through and hand passed off to Casey. And in fairness to James Barry, he did what any good fullback would do. He buried him. He buried Ian Byrne, so he wasn't going any further. But Casey, he couldn't but finish really, and he scored another really good point after that. Hilariously, he had a free then. He had a free, reasonable enough free, maybe 40 yards out, fairly central. And went to take it and slipped. Looked like he nearly twisted his ankle when taking the free, and hit it wide. And he looked to be in a bit of trouble and got taken off after that. But you know, for his debut, 1-1, you'd be very happy with yourself context of a game.
But just on Wexford, I don't want to be negative about Wexford because it was a brilliant home win and they've recovered brilliantly after the first round. But like, I mean, is the only change to their system this year is actually changing the personnel of the sweeper, Brian? Because it looks to me like in the last two All-Ireland quarterfinals they've gone down without even a fight. They've just been very well beaten. Wasn't it Clare last year and Waterford the year before? Like, they didn't look at the races. And then you're thinking, like, are they going to move on with this same system? And is changing it only by the different fella doing the sweeping? Are we seeing anything different for them?
We're not seeing anything different. And I know Davey will point to results and he'll say, right, they had 8 different scorers yesterday. Ian Burnley scored 6 points from free, so they had 7 different scorers in play, and you'll point at all those sort of things. And defensively they're very sound and instructed, and Davey will say he's working within the you know, the remit or the players that he has. But they won 3 under 21 Leinsters in a row. These are no mugs now. You know, they brought on Rory O'Connor and Lee Chin yesterday. Obviously they'd be Stonewall starters later in the year. But Conor McDonald's inside and he barely touched the ball. Like,
never touches the ball.
For 70 minutes. Like, you know, he's the most high-profile hurler I've seen at the moment, and he's not—you know—he's not scoring really, being honest, because he's not getting any balls. To be fair to him, and it's tough watch, it's a tough ask. But look, I know Davey, you're not allowed to say anything negative about it because he'll be able to point to all the positives. But the Wexford crowd are still behind him at the moment. They're hugely passionate down there. There was a big crowd, 6,700, and they really got behind the team and they erupted when they won yesterday. There was no one telling you it was only the league yesterday in Wexford Park, I can tell you that.
No, that's the thing. You see, he will point to these league games, JJ, but league games are league games. Yeah. And like, you've got Clare floating into a game, or Cork or Tipperary. Now, I think Tipperary probably still wanted to win that, so it was a good win. But the acid test is in the big games.
Yeah.
And in quarterfinals, they've gone out terribly badly. So, like, if I was the manager, say, I might change it up this year. And, like, I'm not a tactician in hurling, but I'd definitely do something different.
Yeah, but even the two teams that got lost, it was Waterford and Clare in championship the last couple of years. The two of them are absolutely brilliant at playing a sweeper system. They actually play a small bit themselves. So, obviously, when Wexford have a sweeper, they're giving a sweeper back to their opponents as well. And so, Waterford played it very, very well. And so did Clare. Clare are very, very comfortable playing. We've seen that in the Ireland semi-final last year, or the semi-final first game of the last year, that they actually had to go back to sweeper system against Galway. So they are very, very comfortable playing that as well. That tactic works against teams that are not comfortable playing against the sweeper system.
They all are now, really. It should be a couple of years ago, didn't it?
It should be training. If you're going, knowing you're going to be playing Wexford in the championship, you should be training with a sweeper to play them against them. Like, you know what I mean? Because that's what you're going to come up against. Now, maybe he can use it this year as flip that reverse. People are not expecting him to change. Maybe he will go ahead and change his coming championship. We don't know. You know what I mean? It'd be a great tactical move for him because everyone expects him to play the sweeper if he goes 15-15.
He did that against Offaly.
Did he?
A do or die game in the Leinster Championship. He went more or less, you're up, straight up 15, and they hammered Offaly the same day. But he reverted back to it then in big games. So
But didn't he famously do that with Clare? He was playing a sweeper all year until they played Cork, and they didn't play the sweeper. Like, so he was always known as a real flexible tactician, Davey. And you kind of went, geez, you don't know what he's going to do today. And now all of a sudden he's become unbelievably predictable, Brian.
Yeah. Again, look, I think maybe he is trying to draw us all in, and you know, maybe for that one game where he's going to get them over the line in another quarter final or whatever, or Leinster final, where it gets them over the line. But you know, they've really good hurlers, to be fair to them, and even down the centre, you know, they've the likes of, you know, Liam Ryan, Matthew Hanlon. Now, Liam Ryan wasn't playing yesterday, but they've Matthew Hanlon, obviously, they've Sean Murphy, you know, as I said, Lee Chin, Rory O'Connor, Conor McDonald, Dermot O'Keefe. These guys are household names. They are, you know, they're top class players.
Yeah.
and a couple of real tigerish backs then as well. A sweeper system to me, I'm just totally against it, so I am probably biased from that perspective, and I know it has times maybe that I need to play it and all that, but to me you're just more saying, look, I don't think my backs are good enough, and you know, I don't trust them inside to handle the opposition's forwards, and we're going to try and keep it as tight as possible. That's just my own personal view, so I'm totally against it.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about it a bit more throughout the year. Tom Condon, lads, big fan of Tom Condon on the show.
You're backing up now, Willie.
Brian suggested I should do a GA Jackass with Tom Condon. He's a hardy whore. I wouldn't come out alive. But it's not just a point he scored in the first half. Now, this, like, I mean, when you think about this, is credible, because Tom Condon, looking for me, is an old school hurler, and he's from the era when we all would have started, or ye would have started, because I didn't play, but you're getting it down there. So he comes out the field as a cornerback and he sticks over one of the best points you'll see in a long time on the run, right? And he's the confidence to do that. And there's no way he would have done that 5 years ago. But I thought the most incredible part of Tom Condon was in the 67th minute. So he got this beautiful catch, JJ, and an inspirational type catch, which got a big cheer, in which I'd say every part of Tom Condon just wanted to launch it. He didn't. He knocked the ball into the ground out to Dan Morrissey, who cleared it up, who put it on a lovely ball down the field. I just like thought in my head just how far he's been developed in as a player under this new system, and it's just like it was a great thing to watch. Tom Condon,
it's putting the team before your own individual performance. That's what it is. I suppose John Kiely, probably the manager, probably will go to Tom Condon. That's absolutely brilliant catch. You're going to give him the credit for that, but he done the best thing for the team. Like, he could hit down the field, hit 6 yards, but you might just hit it back to Kenny Person, and then he might hit over the bar, and your catch is forgotten about.
A waste of time.
Yeah, but he's seen the best man in the best position. And look, again, you're looking at this Limerick team, that's what they're doing all over the field. Like, you know, not just Tom Condon doing it, we're all doing it. They don't mind who scores. Once Limerick scored, they're happy enough, and that's even echoed in the half hour line, working back down the field. Once they get the ball, they're going to hit it up. Once Limerick scored, they're happy enough too. But that's the team ethos at the moment, and they're hugely, supremely confident at the moment now, you know, kind of way. So it's a huge thing for Limerick now as well. It's an exciting year ahead for them.
Well, that's the thing. And Brian, like, I mean, this is then you hear, look, maybe Davey doesn't trust his defenders, or, you know, like, different managers, and it's, you put trust in even Tom Condon. Now, I don't want to be anyway harsh on Tom Condon, but I'm only using him as an example because he's not from an era of this hurling. He's not like Keane Lynch coming up through these under 21s and it's like second nature to them. That you can coach a player to become a completely different player if you actually try.
Yeah, but yeah, of course, I agree with you if you actually try. But at the end of the day, he's an intercounty hurler, and you expect that. Like, Intercounty Hurler is an excellent club hurler. To have that little bit that's ahead of everyone else, they should be able to adapt their game to see fit. Just as you said, maybe the message that they've received over time has been different, but, you know, if you change that message in training and you know that's what's expected of you, I think every player should be able to adapt their game, you know, within a reasonably short space of time, because, you know, it has to be a constant message though in training. And, you know, as I said, it's not by chance this has happened. This is the constant message in training, week in, week out. And he knows that catch would have been for nothing, and he would have been probably pulled up for actually not using the ball, probably immediately by the players themselves for not using the ball well. And that's when you know you're at your best as well, JJ. You can definitely attest to this, is when players are almost self-policing. And you know, the message is there across the board. And, you know, it's not a culture of blame or anything, but it's that culture of, you know, you're trying to constantly improve with every single ball that you have.
Yeah, they definitely seem to have that. Aaron Gillan, we've touched on him there. Like, I mean, the point where he had lost it, and then I think it was Tommy Walsh was ahead of him, and he chased him down, and he got the ball away from him, knocked him out of the way, and came in kind of on the end line. Like, he'd no right to win that at all. Like, I mean, he has a right bit of cutting in him, like to say, doesn't he?
Anytime he wins the ball or wins a free or something, he'd go on and he'd give the cornerback an old jab as well. Like, you know, he'd let him know that, I'm after winning a free off you as well. It's great. Supremely confident at the moment, you know what I mean? But all good forwards have to have that as well. Like, you know, you need that self belief, and he believes any ball that comes into his area at the moment, he's going to win it. And look, he's backing it up at the moment. Like, he's on top of his game. I think he's after going on another step from last year again. So, look, it's only be interesting to see, can he maintain that? Again, it's only what, February? And we're kind of, I know he's a lot of hurling done in February, all right, but he's going to have to maintain that and prove that throughout the year, like, you know. So it's interesting to see, is he going to go on an upper level? Like?
And you see it in the football as well, and it does have to be put into context that the lads at Fitzgibbon and Sigerson level, they're at championship pace now, moment, where other lads are just coming back and trying to get into it, Brian. So, like, I mean, it's very obvious the lads that are at that level, really, when you see league games in both hurling and football.
Definitely. I'm just surprised Kylie isn't maybe minding them a little bit more at the moment, and we're seeing a little bit less game time from, because, you know, they're into another Fitzgibbon Cup final. I know it's nearly at the end, but, you know, he's had a huge couple of weeks now. He's on fire, don't get me wrong, but, you know, they have a lot of other hurlers that could be trying at the moment, but I suppose he, you know, John wants to set his stall out early from a Limerick perspective. But JJ, I have to laugh at you. You know, you're praising Aaron Gillan there for giving it to the cornerback or fullback. you'd have took that well yourself.
Right? Yeah. Well, took it and said nothing, yeah.
yeah, of course. Yeah.
Like you did. Where the ball is at the end of the field.
Yeah, boxing the head off him on the ground.
So Shane Dowling then as well. Oh, you're getting in with the Lair Corbin. What happened with you and Lair that day?
You just retaliations all the worse.
Well, to be fair, that was out of character for the two of you. You must have been riled up into
a
frenzy.
Got the boat, was it? Like, anyway.
Did it? Yeah.
Went to the early showers, wanted to get down. It's a bank holiday weekend. We wanted to get out to the pub before the rest.
Because that was a sensational evening. I was down in Kenmare watching. I was down in Kenmare for the weekend, and I was in a lad's house, and I says, "I'm not going down to the pub till this match is over." Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It was just like one of the, you kind of remember where you were. It was such.
I was
a big
in the pub before you were.
You were probably having one with Lair, knowing Lair Corbett. Yeah. Shane Dowling, so he got 1-2. He was outstanding. Yeah. Like, I mean, when you look at his physique and the jersey, and you think he might be carrying a little bit, but, like, I mean, he's all over the field. That's just his build. And, yeah, like, I mean, I don't like the idea that he can't fit into this system. Like, Shane Dowling can fit into any system, yeah, really, because yeah, he just has it. He has it upstairs and he has it in the wrists.
Yeah. Well, I love about Shane Dowling, he's never caught in a tackle. Anytime he gets the ball, he's very, very elusive. He can go right or left. He never engages in the tackle either. Like, you know what I mean? He doesn't put himself into position so a defender can bottle him up.
Right.
You'd rarely see him getting bottled up.
So he gets rid of it.
The back foot. Yeah, either he gets rid of it or else he eludes the defender. Like, right, he's a great kind of sidestep and great turn. He's a turn of pace as well. He has in fairness to him. But the way I liked him as well, he was very unlucky for a goal in the second half. But whereas a lot of forwards would have threw it up and started striking, but he hit it up and batted it.
Yeah.
He's unfortunately straight at Owen Murphy made a good save, but he's just all the tricks in the locker as well. Like, you know, he's a fabulous hurler. And then
a lovely flick in the second half, as Paddy Deegan got a yellow for tackling him.
Oh,
remember,
yeah,
he just flicked it on, I think it was Tom Ryan or something. Like,
he sees two steps ahead. Like, you know, he's a natural forward, in fairness to me.
Yeah, no, definitely. Tony Kelly, we have to talk about this, lads. And Tony Kelly scored 2 from playing the first half, 4 from playing the second half. So Tony Kelly's a regular appearer in performance of the weekend, so we don't need necessarily have to talk too much about Tony Kelly or how brilliant he is, because we know that already. It was Tim O'Mahony. Now, is there shadow boxing going on here, lads? Because you have to remember, Cork and Clare are rivals in Munster. They're going to play each other in Munster. How much of this, Brian, do you think is shadow boxing? Because to me, it would have made no sense to give Tony Kelly the freedom of the park like they did.
Yeah, and Tim O'Mahony's trying to find these probably feet at centre back for Cork as well, and they need to cement a centre back there. But I fully agree with you. I think that is shadow box. I think Cork were trying to figure out, well, what's Clare's system. I think Tipperary did that earlier in the league in the Munster Hurling League final, and then they learnt their lesson and they sorted it out in 2 weeks later in the first round of the league. But maybe they've shown their hand now for Munster Championship. So There certainly is an element of it. I think Cork are just going through the motions. They'll be happy they got the win the other night. They won't want to have had no points after 3 games. But at the same time, they are looking for those couple of extra players, particularly in the defence. And, you know, I think Cork, they're gassed that way. They never take the league too serious. And it's all about building towards that championship. And, you know, you've said it a few times, you know, middle of summer, balls hopping off the ground in Thurles. That's when they come to their fore. But, you know, at the moment, I think they definitely need to find a couple of defenders. Tim O'Mahony, I think, is who they're looking at strongest there from that centre half back position.
Yeah, not
I actually thought he had a good second half, Tim O'Mahony, to be honest with you. I know it's a funny thing to say that Tony Hill, he got 4 points, but he came in, thundered into game that last 10-15 minutes. He scored a point himself, won a free for Patrick Horgan to score a point. But I think Cork's bigger problem is the full back position. Because John Cullen scored, I don't know, 3 or 4 points, but he's beaten Damien Catalan at his ease. And that was man-to-man. It wasn't a case of Damien was holding position and he was letting John Cullen going off. That was, he was trying to mark him man-to-man. And John Cullen has made hay off against Cork down through the last couple of years as well.
He cleaned the same man out in Thurles in the Munster final last year.
I think that's a bigger issue that Cork have to address now. If they go play Clare in a championship later on the year, that's one thing they have to address.
Right.
More than Tim O'Mahony.
And that's the big thing as a forward, Willie. If you can actually get that edge on your back and you don't actually fear who you're marking, you tend to relish in that sort of thing. You know, so John Conlon definitely feels he's the measure of Catalan. So I think Cork have much bigger issues in their back line
than in their forward line. And I know they've brought in Aidan Walsh up front, and they're looking at Alan Cadogan coming back in as well, but I think it's in their back line that they have much bigger issues.
With McDonald back now, you could play Spillane full back now, and he'd be a tiger. Spillane has a bit of size about him, like he's strong,
he could do a man marking job alright on him, but yeah, they're going to have to look at it, because any time that Clare played Cork over the last few years, and John Conlon is after scoring a lot, like,
yeah,
you know,
he's
seemed to
be
at his ease there the night there as well. Like,
Cahalan's not just a marker, he's in there because he's a big fella, he's not even a natural full back, is he? He's always a centre back or a midfielder.
He likes to get the ball and run with it a lot, but look, if he doesn't get the ball, he can run with it. You're not thinking about it, so.
Patrick Horgan is in here, lads, only because he scored 16. Like, I mean, he got 15 of them from frees, but it's just completely wrong not to have a fella who scored 16 points in performance the weekend. Myler said about him after the game, he says, that's what Horgan's there for. He wasn't even getting carried away with 16 points. He's a fantastic free taker, he said. Brilliant hurler. Patrick Horgan wasn't anything outstanding. He gave Brown a bit of a torrid time.
But if you're looking at the Cork forwards, you have to kind of him and Lehan and the two lads. Him and Shane, the three of them, Harney, Lehan, and Horgan. There are three lads you have to focus on. But yeah, kind of Jack Brown. He had him in a bit of bother. Jack Brown was fouling a lot, like, you know. But if you give away a free against him, that's why Clare should have known going into the game that we can foul him. Let the other Cork forwards shoot at the goal. If they score, all well and good, you know. Like, it's not the end of the world if forwards shoot at the goal. But if you put him under pressure, you might have a chance of putting him off. But if you foul him, he's going to score every day. Like, you know, from 75 yards out, he's going to score. Like, you know, he's a fantastic striker of the ball.
Yeah, he's a fantastic striker. Willie Dunphy got two goals, lads. He has to get a mention. I have to get a leash lad in here. But now that you mention brilliant strikers, Cathal Mannion got 4 points from midfield. He was outstanding. He's been in this before. He's definitely thrown them another dynamic. The only thing I'd be wondering about, JJ, is if you've got Cathal Mannion and David Burke, whose both strengths are bombing forward and scoring, and they're very accurate. Who's doing the holding man job?
David Burke would sit back now.
Could he do that?
He sits back in front of his half back line regularly. You know what I mean? He would be comfortable. He could play centre back or wing back. He's very comfortable on the ball himself. Yeah. But if he was with Cathal Mannion, I'd say he would be the defensive midfielder. And Cathal Mannion would be going forward, right? And then to give an option, put Johnny Cohen back in the corner where he started his career as well. Like, you know what I mean? Because they need to find a couple of backs. Galway need to find a couple of backs up front. There's no issues regarding that, you know, because they have shooters all over the field. But I think they need a couple of wing backs, maybe a couple of corner backs, just for competition in places as well. Because I think that's where they found trouble there last year in the All Ireland final. Because look, centre back was McInerney was injured. No point in saying any different. He had no hurling done coming up to it, and didn't have anyone to start instead of him. You know,
wasn't it interesting, lads? We only could see highlights of this, that McInerney was picked at left half back and Mannion was picked at centre half back. Another experiment in Brian, but I wouldn't have thought McInerney would be much of a wing back.
Yeah, but he's just big and elusive, and he's going to shut down that area as well. It's similar enough to what Tom Morrissey does for Dan Morrissey. So, you know, he's just such a strong individual, and Park Mannion has it all. You know, he's able to get up the field, he's able to defend, he's just probably in a rich vein of form as well. You know, he was up there for Hurler of the Year last year, and he's continued into this year, and he's played every game in the league so far at centre back. So maybe he's just looking at the options long term in what they have, because if McInerney did get injured, you know, they have to have a viable alternative there who can actually slot into centre back. And I think that's what happened last year, essentially, is that they just were at sixes and sevens when McInerney wasn't available.
Yeah, they're trying loads of different options. That's very obvious. Quickly before we finish, lads, Matty Kenny did a Mourinho on it in that game. I was looking at it. He brought on David Tracy for Whiteley after 21 minutes. He brought on Liam Rush for Hitherin. I won't be able to pronounce his name, even though Michael Carton told me how to do it last Thursday. I was just looking at it there going, oh shit, I forget what Michael said. When he brought Rush on for him after 26 minutes, and Donald Burke came on for O'Connell, who was in midfield, after 35 minutes. So, like, yeah. I mean, it's always like a real statement of intent from a manager when they do stuff like that, isn't it, JJ?
Yeah,
it's like,
it's
really giving you the kick up the arse when you're coming off that early.
Switching three lads are going off and you're on the field, it's right. I could be the next lad going off here now fairly quick, you know what I mean? So the rest of the lads are still on the field. It's a bit of relief that they're not gone, because obviously as a team they weren't hurling well. I think they only 1-1 or 1-2 scored at that particular stage, and the goal was in the first few minutes. So they weren't hurling well, so any one of the 15 could have went, you know, that kind of way. So look, credit to them, to the battle back, but seemed to be Galway were at their ease near the end of that game.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't get that approach though, Willie, because, you know, I know you can say it's all shadow boxing and it didn't really matter, but I think Dublin need to be making more inroads into that game yesterday, because you know, no disrespect, but they're like, you know, they've played Offaly and they've played Carlow. You know, Galway with their, you know, the two big games, they've Galway and Waterford in this league. So you should be throwing the kitchen sink at them. And what's fine bringing these players on after 20 minutes or 30 minutes when, if they're there available, so start them and throw and go at Galway for all the, all you can, and learn as much as you can with their first 15. So I don't kind of get that approach, you know, from that perspective.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping to get him onto the show on Thursday. He was supposed to do last Thursday's, but then they were playing Galway, so we postponed it until this Thursday. So I'll ask Matty Kenny about that. Right, performance of the weekend winner is Tom Condon, so I have to make it up to Tom after one or two things I might have said. It would have been a hard show. So I'm not sure if Tom listens to the podcast. Probably not, but like, I mean, if you are listening, Tom, I'm back in your good books. There's a Paddy Power pair of lucky pants on the way down to
sorry.
You.
I saw his pants. You're going to say no, though,
aren't you? That's JJ Delaney, Tom. That's JJ Delaney, not me. Right, listen, that's
no,
all.
No, JJ's at the other end of the field. Disclaimer from Brian Carroll, nothing got to do with Andy Connolly.
Jeez, you're all afraid of Tom. Well, geez, I'm looking forward to meeting Tom someday. Right, that's all we've time for. We'll be back on Thursday with a preview show as usual. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.